This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Today's episode of Lead Singer Syndrome is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter promo code GIFTING15 to save 15% off all Loot Crate subscriptions. Great. What is up, all my sinners? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As you may probably already know, my name is Shane. Each week, I'm here every Monday bringing you a conversation with another lead singer, and we talk about what it's like to be the professional frontman or frontwoman of a band. Now, this is episode 57. Can you believe it? 57 times I have recorded an intro to this thing. And today we're going to do it a little bit differently. I'm going to bring this show to you completely unedited, even this intro, no editing. Well, there's a little bit of editing in one part of the episode where Rhodey and I's call fucks up and I cut out some silence. But other than that, this is an unedited episode, which is something I just thought I wanted to bring to you guys just to kind of see, you know, some of the things that I fix here and there. And, you know, when I stutter and whatever, these things happen. And yeah, so if I'm messing up words like I do a lot, you're going to know why. So no black magic, no editing this time. I'm giving it to you straight. So first off, huge podcast news. I talked about it a little bit over the last few weeks, but we are officially launching the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Woo! So here's how it works. The podcast will always be free, so I don't want people worrying about that. It will always be free. But I know there's a lot of people out there that are super fans, and one episode per week is just not enough for you. So basically, for a small monthly cost, you can get more content, bonus episodes. I'm doing some conversations with some people that are not lead singers, believe it or not. So that'll be something as a bonus. I'm going to be doing video chats where I'll be, you know, answering your questions, maybe playing some tunes, whatever. And also, you'll be able to interact with other Lead Singer Syndrome fans, get your name thanked at the end of an episode, all this stuff. And it's all for a super, super low monthly price. Another thing I know you guys want merch. Well, merch is awesome. I love merch. So if you pay a little bit more, you can get stuff sent to you in the mail every 3 months, and you'll be getting stuff. It's really, really cool, and just that support that you give us every month, it does mean a lot, and we want to give back. Also, if you want merch, you know, to buy shirts and all that stuff, that's actually only going to be available if you're in the club. So we're going to make the merch super cheap, and it's going to be awesome. So we really want to make it cool, and we want that thing like where you see someone with the shirt, well, hey, you know they're in the club. You know that's somebody you interact with on Facebook, and I really want this to be special. So there's going to be a private Facebook page set up. I'm going to be there on there all the time. There'll be other members on there all the time. It's going to be rad. We're also doing this thing. If you go for the physical club, like I said, we're going to be sending you patches every 3 months so you can collect the patch. I just think it's awesome and super cool, and I want this to be super, super special for people that care as much about the show as I do. So on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're launching it. So that's in a couple days. I'm sure you follow me on social media already, but I'll be blasting away. So follow me on there. 3 p.m. Wednesday, it's going to be launched. Now, I know I'm going on and on about this. I'm sure in everyone's head is, well, how much is this thing going to cost, Shane? It's going to start at $6 a month. That's for the digital only, which gets all the perks that I mentioned. If you want to do the physical, it's only $3 more a month, so it's $9. You get stuff in the mail. You get the patches like I talked about, all the cool stuff. And, of course, there's going to be a couple higher tiers for you crazy people that want to do all the crazy stuff. So absolutely go for it. Hey, it makes a great gift. Christmas is coming. Maybe you want a special gift for the loved one in your life. This really is the gift that keeps on the gift that keeps on giving. So, 3 p.m., check it out. I cannot wait. On other news, I'm going on tour with River Oaks, my solo project, December 26th to 30th. These tickets also make great gifts, by the way. So if you live in New York City, Philly, Detroit, Pittsburgh, or Cleveland, check it out, riveroaksmusic.com. Tickets are like 12 or 13 bucks. I'll be playing a shitload of Silverstein songs. So it's going to be really, really fun. So please check it out again, riveroaksmusic.com. This weekend in Toronto, Stay Warm Festival. It's finally here, the 17th and 18th. 17th, Silverstein headlining with American Nightmare, What a Band, Citizen, Code Orange, many more. And on the 18th, we have this week's guest, Brody, who is in Protest the Hero. They are headlining with the Flatliners, Wilhelm Scream. River Oaks is playing that show as well. So get your tickets now. I think there's two-day passes available maybe still. There might be tickets at the door, but regardless, be there. It's seriously such a great lineup. You do not want to miss it. So, as always, I should mention we do have all the social medias, so check those out. Get in touch if you want. I love hearing the feedback. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. And, yeah, that's it. So, let's get to it. Speaking of Protest the Hero, I'm so excited to bring you this unedited chat, well, mostly, with my good friend Rhodey. Man, this guy is super hilarious, so I can't wait for you to hear it. So here it is, my conversation with Rhodey Walker of Protest the Hero.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bud. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. Nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you.
Can you hear me okay? Oh, what the fuck? Hello?
Can you not hear me?
Mm.
Yeah, I did another interview the other day, and I think my reception was cutting out like crazy. I don't know what's going on.
No, it's fine. I'm using this. Like, I got the new iPhone, and the fucking cable that comes with it's like all sketchy.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, it's so weird. I don't know, man. I'm not really that jazzed on the, like, one plug. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, my phone's at 30% right now, and hopefully it lasts an hour, you know, or however long we're going to talk to. You know, like it's funny how that, you know, it's, like, so short-sighted. It's like, okay, I can't record audio out of my phone and charge it at the same time. Great. Thanks for that. But it's better.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like I'm so stoked on the new iPhone, but I know that it's just the same old shit and there's going to be problems.
Yep.
It's like I don't have it, but I want it so bad. Like I'm just a slave to the fucking to Apple.
We're slaves. Yeah. What happened? Where are the punk kids? No. Where are the punk kids from Witchy, you know?
They died with the dinosaurs.
Well, dude, it's great to have you. Finally. We've been talking about doing this for like a year.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the show. I listen to your Frank Turner one today.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I listen a ton. I love it, man.
Thank you, man.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah, man. And so honest, that guy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He just, every time, you know?
I mean, I would be bummed if he wasn't.
Is it cool if I do a podcast in here? Do you need the lounge? Okay. No worries. Yeah, we're sharing a bus on this tour. Yeah, I'm in London right now. We're sharing a bus on the tour, so you know, I'm like trying to find a spot to do.
Yeah,
the
one
podcast.
Of those double deckers.
Yeah, it's a double decker, so I'm in like we call it the Sky Lounge.
yeah,
but anyways, dude,
the one by all the bunks.
Exactly. There's 16 of us. 16 of us on this fucking bus. So, anyways, dude, so great to have you. What is going on with you today, man? You're at home in Canada?
Yeah, I'm in Whitby. I moved back to the hometown a couple of years ago. Yeah, nothing's going on with me. I'm just tinkering around the house today.
That's cool. So yeah, you moved downtown for a while, like people like to do in their 20s, and then you're over it and you're back. Now you're about 30
yeah.
now?
Yeah, I'm exactly 30.
You're exactly 30 and you're back in the suburbs.
Well, not exactly. Like, I didn't turn 30 today. but yeah, no, my girlfriend and I guess my wife now, we moved to Toronto for 4 or 5 years, and then I hated every second of it. and moved back home, bought a house, and fully domesticated now.
Cool. Why did you hate living downtown?
I don't really know. I mean, part of the time we lived really far north, like where subways don't really go, and it was like, you know, someone would be like, hey, let's meet downtown. I'd be like, I got to get on a bus for like an hour.
Right.
You know, and it really wasn't convenient for me, but we lived closer to the downtown core for part of it. And even then, you know, it was just, it's kind of like I was getting to that point in my life where it's like, I'm getting older. I don't care as much about, you know, getting really drunk with friends and staying out all night,
sure.
You know? So, yeah, I think the time just came and we were like, let's get the fuck out of Toronto, go back home, maybe think about buying a house. And we got fortunate enough to get into the market before it got absolutely insane. And
right.
Here
She's
we are.
From Whitby too?
She is. Yeah. We went to high school together.
Oh, high school sweetheart. Is that high school sweethearts? Yeah. That's very cute. I've been drinking.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
No, that's all right.
I'm still into getting drunk and staying out late, just so you know. So,
yeah,
that's still my MO. No, dude. Well, hey, it's really good to have you on the show. First time on the show. We've been talking about it for a long time. And what's going on right now with protest? Obviously, we've got the big Stay Warm Fest show coming up December 17th and 18th. Protest headlining one day, Silverstein headlining the other day. But what are you doing with your time right now? You guys are working on new stuff, getting ready for a tour. What's going on?
Well, we just released an EP, which we also kind of released a year ago. So we're just sort of rehashing the same old shit. But, you know, right now we're just trying to practice those songs and get them ready for a live environment. Turns out we may have been a little ambitious. But, you know, we're just trying to get it together so that we can, you know, when we play on the 18th, that's kind of the final day of our Canadian tour. Like, we're flying out west in a week and we're going to haul our asses back across the country to be there for Stay Warm Fest, which I'm super stoked for. I mean,
it's a great lineup. We really like basically people that are listening that are in Toronto that don't know, basically it's a festival that we did last year, one day, and this year we expanded it to 2 days, but basically we've handpicked all the bands. There, a lot of them are really close friends and bands we really like, you know, like American Nightmare, which is like crazy, and you know, Wilhelm Scream, who's on your tour. So it's really, really a great lineup.
Yeah, I kind of wish the Flats were doing our entire tour. Like, when I saw them on that date, I was so stoked. Like, I love that band.
Yeah.
And like, we used to play shows with them constantly when we were young, and like, haven't played a show with them in years and years and years. And since then, I've just been listening to them constantly. I might be their fucking number one fan, you know? But, yeah, really excited to play with those guys. And River Oaks is playing, huh?
That's right. I'll be
that's
there.
That's pretty fucking cool.
I'm opening for some technical punk metal bands or whatever, so that'll be weird.
I'm sure it'll work just fine. I saw you open up for the Wonder Years.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah. It was fucking awesome, man.
I was nervous as fuck.
Well, I bet. Like, I couldn't have done that, man. Like, you give me a fucking acoustic guitar and you put me in front of, like, two people, I can't do it.
No.
You know? And it sucks because it's like, oh, I'm a professional. This is what I do for a living. And I can't do it. So I can't even imagine that crowd of kids looking at you. But you did great. It sounded fucking amazing.
Well, thank you, buddy. I got to ask you, though, like, you're talking about performing and stuff. Is that something that you still get nervous when you perform? Or do you have those kind of feelings?
Because
you've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, I mean, one benefit for me is that I am pretty blind, right? So I take my glasses off. I don't really see any faces. And, all those feelings of nerves kind of go away. But I get more, like, stressed out, you know, because it's like on the road the entire time, I'm pretty fucking stressed just based on the state of my voice.
Right.
It's like, you know, like if it's, three shows in, it's always like three shows in, my voice starts going away a bit, and it's like, oh my god, I'm gonna lose my voice really badly, not be able to do the rest of the tour. And I just like build this huge thing up in my mind and end up like a ball of stress in my bunk.
Yeah.
But then as it goes on, it's like, you know, I'll have a couple really, really rough shows there. But then I like it kind of strengthens up and it gets used to the abuse. And by the end, it's like, well, you know, I could sing every day for the rest of my life and be fine.
Yeah, it's a common thing that happens with when I talk to singers on the show about singing is like, I think it was actually, you bring up the Wonder Years. I think Soupy from the Wonder Years says when they start a tour, he does one show and then they take a day off.
Yeah.
And maybe two. And that's the thing, like, you can practice all you want, but it's different when you actually are on stage, like, running around. There's the adrenaline and everything. Like, your voice just, it's a whole nother can of worms, like, figuring that out. So why don't you guys do that? Like, just have a couple shows, one, two, up to three, and then have a day off. Do you ever do stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that would be really smart. we're not very smart people. You know, and it's really something that, like, it's just in my head. You know what I mean? Like, 90% of the, like, oh, I'm losing my voice is in my head. And I just need to really sit myself down, relax, and, you know, just do the best that I can. And, yeah, I mean, it would be smart to give it a day rest and come back stronger the next day. But, you know, most of the time, people aren't really thinking about me.
Well, your voice, I mean, you have a very unique voice for, you know, this the scene or whatever you want to fucking call it. You sing very, very high.
Yeah.
I mean, are you like singing kind of at the top of your range when you're like, are you really pushing yourself? And is it like you're afraid that if you lose, like, you know, a couple semitones, you just simply can't get there?
Yeah, I mean, like, most of the set, like, I sing, like, two or three notes, and they're all off my range, right? And that's why all our songs sound the same, because I'm singing the same freaking notes over and over again. But yeah, like, I'm at the peak of my range for most of the set, and then some of it goes beyond the peak of my range, and it's just a nightmare. So, yeah, if I lose a little bit of my voice, I lose it all.
Yeah.
You know, so that can be pretty freaking stressful for me.
You ever cancel shows, or do you just kind of have to just do your best?
For the most part, I just suck it up. You know, like, back in the day, like, we did a tour with the Bled in, like, 2006. Mm-hmm. And I got, like, super sick, ended up in the hospital, and that, like, I had to bail out on a couple shows. And that's really the last time that I've done it, like, you know, if I got to go up and scream the entire set, I'll go up and do that just because it's like, you know what? I feel bad for kids that paid money and then I'm going to just be like in the back feeling sorry for myself. You know, sure. So I don't know. I feel like I owe it to the kids to go out there and at least fucking try.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Well, relating it back to myself as I do on this podcast, I had a pretty rough show in Germany a few days ago where it was like, you know, I'm going to sound raspy and like those notes at the top of my range. Yeah, I might get there. I might not. And
they might be screams.
Right. Exactly. And it wears you down a little bit, you know, in terms of your psyche and your, you know, PMA. And that's the worst part is just that. And then like you look at the schedule. OK, when's the next fucking day off? Hopefully I can rest and then I can be back, you know, next week. But
yeah,
it does happen.
They're like few and far between, right?
In Europe, this tour has been pretty for us. Has been pretty grueling. Like, you know, usually I think we had 7 in a row, which is quite a lot.
Yeah, that's pretty taxing.
Yeah, and especially because every time you go to Europe or Australia or whatever, when you have to fly somewhere, you start out with jet lag and not sleeping.
Yeah,
and which is, you know, as most people know, as a singer, you really do need your sleep. So.
Yeah. We always try when we fly anywhere that's, you know, further away than just the other side of the country, we try to get there at least a day or maybe 2 days before so we can sort of combat that jet lag. But I mean, it doesn't usually work. You get there, you can't sleep, you're pretty excited, you have a bunch of beers, and then instead of jet lag, you're just super hungover and jet lag. So
yeah, I know. The free wine on the plane, it'll get me. It gets me.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the new stuff being ambitious, and it sounded like you're a little bit scared of performing the new EP live. Is that kind of the whole band, like guitar ambitious wise, drum ambitious wise, or is it mostly you're just talking about your voice?
I think it's both my voice and guitars. Like, I don't want to put words in those other guys' mouths, but it's difficult. But yeah, it's kind of how we've always done it. Like, I mean, no one's ever going to go and say that we are the tightest live band ever. So we'll always figure out a way to slop through it. But, you know, since we've had a certain technology available to us, we've stopped writing in like we used to sit in my parents' basement and write a fucking record, you know, all in one go,
yeah,
you know, all there. And, you know, since we don't live particularly close to each other, we just, you know, use Logic, and we, I don't mean actual Logic, because it would probably be more logical to write the songs together, but you know, like
Logic's
we use
the computer program. Yes.
Hello.
Did I lose you? Hello.
Oh my God. Sorry. Hello.
I got you,
you got me now. Yeah. Sorry. I hit the mute button on my phone with my face.
No problem.
It's a common,
that's okay,
common problem. I got high cheekbones.
Okay. Well, I won't edit it. So I think I lost you like when we were talking about Logic, which is like a kind of like a Pro Tools program for people that don't know.
Yeah, so we've gotten kind of lazy over the years, and it's like we don't live particularly close to each other anymore, so we don't really get together to write. It's like they just send me a block of music. I write a bunch of lyrics and vocals over top of it, and I send it back to them. They tell me what they think. I go into the studio and I record it, and I like never once do we actually practice the song before it's recorded.
So you guys don't even really get in the same room and crank up the amps anymore?
No.
That's wild.
And then when we do get to practice, it's like we'll run one of those songs to the best of our capabilities and be like, all right, everybody go home and practice the fuck out of this. You know, but like it always gets there somehow, but we'll see. I mean, like I'm waiting for the day that the one song just beats us.
Right. No. The thing is now you guys have, I mean, what, you have four full-length records plus extra stuff. You have a lot of stuff anyways that you're going to play live. Like you don't even have to play everything, right? So when a song, you practice it and it doesn't really work out, you don't even really have to play it, I guess, if you can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of,
you
know, because when you're a young band, you have to play all your songs because it's all you have.
Yeah.
Whether they're good,
that's right,
whether they're bad, whether they're easy, whether they're hard.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking forward to. Like we haven't done, a support tour in a very long time. And I'm so excited to have like a half an hour, 45 minute set where it's like, well, this is all the time we got. Sorry, we couldn't get to those really difficult ones.
Well, you're going out with August Burns Red. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's early next year.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It's like, I think it starts, we leave for it like January 5th or 6th.
Great. Great. No, there's some of our best friends and, I'm sure it'll be an awesome tour.
Yeah, I've heard only good things about them.
Well, let's go back. We're talking about, you know, I guess one question while we're on the subject. Do you think that kind of letting the secret out that like bands these days aren't making records, like they're not even jamming together, like it's just sending like fake drums and DI'd guitars into a computer back and forth. Like, do you think that bums out fans, especially like, you know, in the, you know, metal genre, who are more kind of like sometimes traditionalists in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, it might, but I mean, I think people have to be realistic.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I mean,
technology
you're being
advances.
Honest. You're being honest. I appreciate that. It's just that's something no one's really talked about on this show. Like the latest Silverstein song, we didn't get in a room together. Actually, no, we did once just to make sure we could, the drums were okay. But, everything else, it was written with programmed drums back and forth and sent and everything. So, you know, you're doing entire records like that where you literally aren't you aren't getting together until you're recording. That's going to like kind of blow people's minds.
Really?
Well, I mean,
I thought it was fairly common knowledge. I mean, like in the progressive metal scene, it seems like a lot of bands are like really, really embracing technology, like even more than, you know, we are, where they've incorporated a lot of it in their live shows and stuff like that. And I think people would be more bummed out to find out how many tracks a lot of bands are running during the live shows. But,
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, just everything's getting so slick. And I, like, I don't personally, like, I love Cam. I think he does a great job. He's the fellow who produces our stuff, but I've never really loved the production that's like slick as a pig's dick, you know?
Yeah.
I've always loved the stuff. And I think it's more, maybe more appropriate for us to have the stuff that kind of sounds a little more organic or not so, so tight, because there is no way for us to replicate that tightness live.
Sure. Unless you fake it.
Yeah, unless we were to fake it.
Which is what bands start doing, because they record everything so tight and so perfect, then they play it live and it's a mess. And they're trying to sound like their records, and then they just basically are playing to their records live.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. I mean, at that point, you're paying for a ticket to see Britney Spears dance to her CD, right?
Pretty much.
But I don't know. I always think it's kind of interesting to see how, you know, like, people talk about integrity in music and how it's here in like rock to some degree, and how, you know, Justin Bieber or the big pop stars don't have it, but they don't really know how much of that stuff has bled down into like the smaller scenes. And it's a lot more than people realize, I think.
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, I always feel weird about like calling out bands on backing tracks and stuff. I mean, you know, but it's very, very common. And I always feel the need to say my band doesn't use backing tracks. But it's like, there's a lot that do. And you're right. I think people would be more bummed out.
Sorry,
about
I
that.
Think I'm
going to. Hello? It's weird.
Hey, buddy. Hello. Hello. Oh,
are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, weird.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I'm going to go like upstairs in my house just in case it gets better reception or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's whatever. It's been okay. These things happen, man.
Yeah.
I edited.
I mean,
it out.
I'm a regular listener. I've heard some of it happen that you've left in, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I typically don't leave it in unless it's like kind of funny or it's a real edit problem. But this will be fine.
That's kind of one thing that I'm really interested about doing this, is to see like the editing, you know, like, because I listen to it all the time. I listen to all of them, and it seems to me like, you know, it's everything, you know, there's nothing edited out, but
I don't cut out much. Sometimes I'll cut out, like, if someone says something like weird that I like think they might regret, we'll cut that out. Like, I do have
that's
integrity.
Real nice,
I do have integrity for my guests, you know, like, I'm not trying to put anybody, like, you know, on blast. And then sometimes, like, if I stutter a lot, I'll fix that, you know? Like, you know, otherwise, like, I don't really take out parts of people's stories that I think are boring or anything. Like, I think the whole point of the format is to keep it long, you know, and have moments like this where we're talking about what it is. Because it's a real conversation, and this is the way you get to the real good shit, is by having a long conversation, you know?
Yeah. No, that's definitely what I enjoy about it. You know, it's interesting because it's like, even bands that, you know, like, maybe I don't like or I'm not interested in or something like that, I'll still listen to it, and you learn more about the person, and it's like, everybody's fucking interesting. Everybody seems... like, at the end of it, I'm always like, that guy seems genuinely affable. And then they play the song, and I'm like, I can enjoy the song a little bit more knowing the person behind it.
Yeah, it's true. And that's something, like, there's my stuttering. You wouldn't believe how many people, fans of this podcast, are like, oh, yeah, like, I never really checked out this band before, and now, like, I love the band. And I guarantee you it's because you're spending an hour with this person. And most of the people on my show are good dudes, dudettes, and have compelling stories and reasons that they're musicians and reasons that they're singers. And that makes their music mean more, just like you said. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of why I'm hesitant to do this, because it's like, I listen to it and everybody's so friggin' interesting. And then I'm kind of thinking about myself being like, I don't have that much to say. I haven't done that much.
Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that right now. We're going to go back to the beginnings of your band. You know, we grew up in the same scene in Southern Ontario, and you guys are a bit younger than us. You guys kind of came up like sort of as a punk band. I remember you guys being like almost like a political punk band. Like I thought of you guys as kind of like a propaganda sort of thing, except you guys had, I mean,
not
obviously
good.
Luke. No, I kind of like your early stuff, to be honest, but you had Luke, you know, in your band, who is just like a super shredder guitar player, which made your band kind of different because you were so technical. You guys also had this like punk, you know, kind of attitude and aesthetic. So talk about your upbringing, like when you guys got together as kids, you know, in the suburbs of Toronto, and how that all started with you. Cause I think that story is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a typical story, right? Like we were just kids in the suburbs. It's like Friday night, you go to the local movie theater, hang out with your friends and all sorts of stuff. And it was boring and it was stupid. And we wanted something more to do. And we were listening to, you know, a lot of NOFX and Propagandhi and all the Fat Records, Epitaph bands. And we were like, some of this stuff's kind of easy to do. Why don't we just grab some guitars and do it?
Right.
And, you know, like we started without a drummer. We were two guitarists and a bassist. And then Mo was on guitar at the time. He's like, I'm just going to go get a drum kit. Who gives a fuck? I'll learn it. And then he did. And, you know, for the first little while, it was just standard rock time beats. And then he got that punk beat down and got the double kickers going there. And I don't know.
That was so Canadian the way you said that. Got the double kickers down going down there. That was amazing.
The worst part is like I picked that up from some guy we stayed with after a show in Brockville.
Okay.
Like years and years ago. He took us out to his house and it was just like it's in some place called like Crystal Rock or something like that. The guy's name was there are two of them. They're Cody and Chud.
Chud, okay.
And the guy was talking about like Slipknot or something. He's like, oh, fuck, that guy is flying on the double kickers there, isn't he? It's like, as soon as he said it, it was just like, that is stuck in my brain and it'll never be called anything else to me.
No, that's incredible, man. So you were playing guitar or bass at this point, or you're just singing?
I was just singing. Yeah. Like, you know, like even at that time, like nobody was really any good at anything, but they were all a lot better than me at guitar.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I was just like, whatever, I'll just sing about it. And I think that's how a lot of singers, like listening to your podcast, that's how a lot of people seem to have done it, was just like, well, we need a singer. I guess I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that was kind of the case for me.
Yeah, but your vocal style, I mean, is a lot, like you talk about Propagandhi and NOFX and Fat Records bands.
Mm-hmm.
The way you sing is, I've never heard a band, like a punk band like that, sing like you do. Like, you know, your yeah. style of singing is a lot more like, I don't want to be insulting, like it's almost like a, you know, it's metal. Like it's like almost like
oh, yeah.
80s metal in a way, because you have such a high
oh,
range.
Yeah, I mean, I went through this phase where I was like, I just want to get like the highest vocals I can get, sing as high as friggin' possible. And I started listening to like only Skid Row, you know, like all the time. And I was just like, I want to learn what Sebastian Bach does. And then I picked up that sort of style in there. And, you know, now a lot of people call it a unique voice. Some people call it a very off-putting voice. but I think just taking my influences from the punk world and taking my influence from like glam metal and smashing them together, I've come out with something that is sort of unique.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Most of the time it sounds really bad to me, to be quite honest.
Okay, man. Well, if that's what you think about yourself, like you really got the self-deprecation down.
Self-deprecation is an important part of I don't know what I'm saying, but
I know what
it's
you
like,
mean.
It's always like the fucking final rap battle in 8 Mile, you know. It's like you get it out there. It's like, yeah, my friend Cheddar Bob shot himself in the leg. What now?
Exactly.
You say it because I don't know. You get it out there before other people can, I guess.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that. And so you guys coming up again, you guys are I mean, basically trying to be a punk band, but you're trying to be Sebastian Bach and Lucas Shredding.
Yeah.
And you guys basically developed this sound, but, you know, also you're sort of a political band in a way, but then you're kind of in the metal scene, kind of in the punk scene, kind of in the, like, you know, hardcore scene, but then literally you are not taking yourselves seriously at all. And that's thing about Protest the Hero that I think makes you guys even more unique than just your sound is your attitude.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, like, everything in our music sounds so dead serious, right?
Right.
And it really doesn't represent the people that we are very well, you know, because none of us are incredibly serious people. And, like, sometimes the music might even sound intelligent, but, you know, we're not very intelligent people either. But, you know, we want to make an example of the duality of our character and just show people that though it might sound deadly serious, we're not super serious about it. You know, there is some comedy to it. There is some tongue in cheek stuff. And we just want to kind of promote, I guess, guest promote the fact that we are not as serious as it might sound.
That's absolutely makes sense to me, you know, but I remember seeing shows where, you know, you're headlining like the Sound Academy in Toronto, like 2,500 people there, and you're just like smoking a cigarette on stage, being kind of like, it's almost like half comedy, which, you know, like it's just, you know, you're saying things that are completely ridiculous, and, you know, it's like I can't really think of any other band in your scene that ever did that. And did you get that from did you get that from anyone else, or is that literally just your personality, or is that also, you talked about how you get nervous on stage. Was that also a way to combat that?
Yeah, it is a little bit of all the things, but I mean, again, it comes down to like going to Warped Tour as a kid and seeing NOFX and they'd be making jokes on stage in between songs and,
right,
you know, all those bands that were doing stuff like that. Like, I think you do a little bit of it as well. Like the last time I saw you guys, you were joking about a bunch of stuff pretty good on stage. And I think that probably comes from a very similar place that mine comes from, which is, you know, like just growing up watching the bands that I really enjoyed, and yep, they didn't take it overly seriously like a lot of the heavy metal guys do.
No, absolutely. Exactly. That's, I mean, you know, something like, you know, someone like Keith from Every Time I Die is similar to that too. You know, he's definitely a guy that like doesn't take it seriously. And, you know, us being all kind of growing up in the same area, you know, that could have something to do with it. But,
yeah,
absolutely. Just looking at my notes here for a second. I also keep having someone calling me and I have to keep declining the call, which is super annoying. yeah, no, it's funny. So you guys get going, you have this sort of, you know, personality, you have these fans now. Do you ever feel like people are expecting you to be funny and there's days when you just don't want to be?
Oh my God. Like, I don't know if they're expecting it, but like there are definitely days where I am nothing that resembles funny.
Right.
Like, but I'm trying my best, you know, like I go, 'cause I don't think about what I'm going to say before I go out there. I just, it's like super zen, right? Like I go out and just let it, whatever happens, happens, whatever comes out, comes out. And some nights nothing comes out, you know, like I just sit there and make stupid like fart and dick jokes and people go, wow, this guy's dumb. And they're right.
Oh man.
Have you guys ever played Luxembourg?
We have played Luxembourg, yes.
Was it like a crazy quiet room? Or was that just us?
No, when we played there twice, and one time, I don't remember the second time. One time we played and it was fucking crazy show, which was surprising, yeah, because like Luxembourg, for people that don't know, it's like a very small country that's like basically right beside France, and people speak French there, and you know, France is not a rock hotspot. So we had like a wild, wild show there and it was awesome. But like, yeah, the quiet place for us is like always Japan. Like they're dead quiet in Japan.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're very attentive, right?
So
they want to like see exactly what you're doing.
So some dick jokes didn't go over too well in Luxembourg is what you're trying to say.
Oh my God. You know what? Like, I feel like my jokes were bang on that night. Like I was on fucking fire, but every single thing, it was like, I'd finish saying it and I'd just met with like a room of silence. It was like, I actually, the song Sex Tapes, it starts with like a vocal pickup and I whispered it without the microphone and our merch guy heard it.
Oh man.
Like it was crazy quiet. I don't know if they were being like crazy respectful or just like really hated it, but
I don't know.
It was the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life.
Some of those places where they don't get a lot of shows, I think sometimes kids just don't know what to do. And in Luxembourg, they might not have understood you very well.
That's a very good point.
Yes.
I don't really cater very well to non-English speaking audiences.
No, it's hard. I mean, we just got out of France actually yesterday. We played two shows in Lyon and Paris, and like it's definitely one of the hardest countries to kind of convey your message.
When you go to France, do you ever use the like Québécois français that you learn in elementary school?
I don't really know any. I know like for our American listeners, like I'm really good at food translations because everything on our food is in English and French, you know? So like, I know I can read a menu in France easily. And then there's certain things like, I was like, man, the show is like so sick. So I'm like, you know, c'est malade, which I'm not sure is the exact translation, you know, but I thought that was funny.
Yeah. This entire crowd is ill.
I know like the words, I know the vocabulary, but I don't really know how to tie sentences together in French, and it's kind of hard to start speaking when you just don't even know how to say like the little shit words, you know?
Oh yeah, I try it every time, but for the most part I end up just like making fun of the French that I know, because as soon as I start speaking it, people start laughing,
right? Oh yeah, I mean, especially with the Quebecois, like they think it's so funny in France.
Yeah, like you're up there going tabernak, and they're going what? What about?
I don't think they know tabernak. No. Oh man. So you guys got going, and you know you brought in Chris Adler of Lamb of God to play drums on one of your records, and he seems like a pretty serious dude.
Oh yeah. I mean,
how is his personality meshing with you guys in the studio?
He like, hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
You got me. Okay. He is pretty serious. I mean, you watch an interview with him, he seems dead serious, but I mean, he's really funny.
Oh
like,
yeah.
He is very, very funny. But I mean, at the end of the day, like he's super chill. So it comes off like, you know, he's a dead serious guy when he's just chilling. But yeah, he was awesome. Like that was kind of weird for us, 'cause we were like, oh my God, this Chris Adler, he's a big deal. He's amazing. Yeah. Love Lamb of God and all that stuff. And, you know, it was really cool how quickly he agreed to do it. And he was such a nice guy. And he said such good things about the record. That was a really humbling experience. I friggin' love that guy.
Yeah, man. No, I have met him and he is nice, but he did seem very, very serious. So,
yeah.
So I just was wondering, I just picture that dynamic. And, you know, did you guys ever do anything live with him or just the record?
No, just the record. I don't know. We're still kind of, well, for me anyway, like I didn't spend that much time with him. You know, the other guys were in there kind of teaching the songs, playing the songs with him, and then, you know, recording the songs with him. And I just kind of came in one day and was like, hey, Chris, nice to meet you. Good job.
That's cool.
You know, so I didn't really spend that much time with him. So I'm still kind of like star-stricken by him a little bit.
Right.
You know, so I would never call him up and be like, you want to do this live or what? So, yeah, I don't know that it'll ever happen, but it'd be really neat if it did.
No, absolutely, absolutely. We got to take a quick break to hear about our sponsor, but I'll be right back with Rhody from Purchase the Hero. Now, as you guys know, I'm pretty nerdy. I mean, I've already got my Rogue One tickets for this weekend. I'm really excited for, apparently they're launching 100 new Pokemon in Pokemon Go. I think today is going to happen. So I'm like checking my phone for updates. So I am definitely on the geeky side. I always have been. That's okay because geeks are cool now. But If you are like me and you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, you got to check out Loot Crate. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. So whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Everything's exclusive. It's really, really awesome. So treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They're always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They're meddlesome. Hello, friends. It's time for a revolution. So fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop figure, our monthly t-shirt, and pin. Now, for the holiday season, Loot Crate is launching one of the deepest discounts they've ever done, 15% off all Loot Crate subscriptions. So how it works is you have until the 19th, December 19th, at 9 p.m. to describe, and you get that month's crate, the one I just talked about. But when that cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So you have until the 19th, 9 p.m. Pacific. So what you got to do is you got to head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter the code GIFTING15, that's one word, GIFTING15, and you're going to save 15% off all Loot Crate subscriptions. Now, this isn't going to work with the new stuff they have like Lootware, Loot Anime, Loot Gaming. That stuff's all awesome too, but this is just for the OG Loot Crate. And it does work domestically and international. So if you're internationally like me, because I'm from Canada, check out Loot Crate. They have really, really great deals for people outside of America. So you got Christmas coming up. This is a pretty good gift. So check it out, lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter promo code GIFTING15. So I got to talk to you a little bit about, you know, you've said multiple times that you're not intelligent people. You know, you always you're downplaying this all the time. But you guys have done some kind of interesting stuff, band-related business stuff that not a lot of other bands are doing. The first one was the crowdfunding thing you did, which raised a tremendous amount of money, you know, and then now doing the subscription songs where you're putting out, you know, one song a month for 6 months. And, you know, you just talked about how you're making an EP now of those songs that you've already kind of released to your fans. Now, where do all these ideas come from? And kind of why are you taking this approach rather than the more traditional, you know, putting out a record every 2 years and touring approach?
Yeah, I mean, we did the put a record out, tour on it for 2 years, put another record out for some time, and it was good for us. But at the end of the record cycle, it was like, we're broke. Like, we have to put out another record, and we have to get back out on the road, you know, to put food in our mouths.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, necessity is the mother of invention, right? And it was like, we had to figure out some new way to do it. And Mo kind of came to us and was like, look at all this money these video games are making on this Kickstarter thing. And we were like, would that be applicable? And then we looked at some other bands that had done it. And it was all just a go from there. And after that, it was like, you know, it seems like the industry is changing. And as opposed to resisting that change and trying to stay the old model, we're just doing our best to embrace the change.
Yeah.
And, you know, like these ideas that we're using aren't original to us in any way, shape, or form. We're just, you know, trying to stay with the current things that seem to be working. We're trying to, you know, ride the wave.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is smart though what you're doing, and it does seem to be working. It seems like you guys don't have to tour as much, maybe, because you guys kind of own your own music. You know, you guys kind of do everything on your own terms. You know, is that accurate?
It is. I mean, you know, it would probably be more financially beneficial to tour a lot more, but we're doing okay. You know, we're working hard enough that it's like, we're surviving.
Sure.
And it's really not a great time for us to be, you know, out touring our asses off. And maybe that's because of lack of drive, but you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, you know, Timmy's got a kid, and there's a bunch of stuff that's really preventing us from going full time. And one of those things is the burnout, right? You know, when we were younger, we toured a lot, and you know, a couple of guys burned out. You know, that's one of the reasons I think Mo and Arif left the band.
Yeah.
Was they were burnt out on the road. Every time during the 2011 touring cycle, we were talking about, you know, oh, we got to go here, we got to go there. And they'd be like, nah, I don't think I can do it. You know, and it's like, I respect that because I feel that sometimes too. You know, like when tour's coming up, I kind of go, ah, it's just like uprooting my life. But in the same, it is the thing that has afforded me, you know, everything I have, my life, my happiness, all of that stuff. So I sometimes take it for granted, but it's very important. And we're just really trying not to burn each other out.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, every band that has longevity has a system, I guess, that has to work for them. And yeah, I mean, with Silverstein, we just don't stop.
And yeah, no.
I have a weird thing where I'm like, when I'm home, I kind of wish I was on the road. When I'm on the road, I wish I was home.
And oh yeah,
it's pretty much 50-50 that I am on, you know, at home or on the road, or maybe even on the road more than 50% of the time. You know, so that's kind of like my life exists on the road just as much as it does at home. So it's weird because I can.
Hey, you guys go fucking hard, man.
We do. We always have. And it's like weird because people say, oh, I'm burnt out. Okay, well, I might be burnt out at being home. Whereas other people are like, what do you mean burnt out at being home? Like, home is home. Well, not really for me. You know, so.
Yeah,
so
no, I get that. Like, that sense of like cabin fever, right?
Yeah.
You're cooped up and you just need to get out.
Exactly.
You know, and I certainly have felt that at times, but in the past few years, I really haven't felt that as much. You know, it's like this hunger for some sort of normalcy has sort of arisen inside me. And I like a schedule, sort of. You
know? Absolutely.
And tour just doesn't really provide that. But in the same, I do love being out there traveling and all that stuff and playing shows for kids that like it. But I think my hunger for home outweighs my, you know, my hunger for the road.
Right. But you're gearing up for this this tour with August Burns Red. Is that going to be – that's going to be the longest tour you guys have done in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And
– it's got to be what, like a full 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah. But I'm excited about that, you know, because, again, this is our first time not headlining in probably 2 or 3 years. And just playing like a shorter set, like not having as much stress or pressure on me. I feel like I'm really going to be able to go out there and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and the singer from August Burns Red is like crazy huge jacked, and I'm going to try and pick up as many freaking tips from him as possible.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He's a good friend of the show. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Jake. And yeah, he's got his, like, he's got his own like weightlifting company and stuff now. He's like, he's,
yeah, like, and super like fitness apparel and stuff.
So yeah, you never struck me as like a big time jack guy. Are you working on their pipes?
Past few years, I've been lifting a little here and there. Nothing to write home about, but maybe after this August Burns Red tour,
maybe.
I'm thinking about shaving my head and trying to look just like the singer August Burns Red and like walk around as his like little Vern Troyer, you know?
Absolutely. We just watched all the Austin Powers movies like on the last tour. We had like a movie day where we watched like all three of them, and man, those things still hold up, dude.
They really do. I mean, they're stupid. Like, they're stupid as fuck, but I love them.
Me too. Me too. Like, if anything, those movies are underrated.
Yeah. We did a tour where we came into the Austin Powers music, and like we had quotes play in between songs from it. And it was going real great. People were really receptive. But when we got to the UK, they thought we were like fucking making fun of them.
Like,
they thought it was
just
like a jab at them or something. And it was like, no, like, just a good movie.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I'm actually,
think the last time I saw you was in the UK, actually.
And I'm in the UK
Sonosphere.
I'm in the UK right now, actually. I'm in London.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that is the last time. That is the last time I think I saw you. I think we were talking a lot about the Maple Leafs.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which God help us all, but.
It's pretty exciting time right now for the Maple Leafs, though.
Well, yeah, with the new kid, you know, Matthews.
Yeah.
Scoring all the goals. Well, for the first game anyways.
Well, yeah, and then taking a little break from scoring the goals.
yeah, a little break, all right. No, I mean, we'll talk about sports for a minute. People like that. Are you a big hockey fan?
I am, yeah. I mean, mostly just the Leafs, right, which is a horrible thing to be a fan of, essentially, but I love them. I don't know why. You know, I grew up playing hockey like most people in Canada, and that was the team that I always cheered for, and I came back.
Yeah, that's a rough existence. Like, I always think of that Propaganda song, you know, when it's like, I like the Maple Leafs.
I like the Maple Leafs.
They remind me of me. And then he goes, I don't remember the next line, but basically just how.
Yeah, he talks about how they're, you know, the franchise is kind of reviled.
Yes.
And all sorts of stuff.
Internationally reviled, yes.
Yeah.
Which, there's the self-deprecating thing. Speaking of Propaganda, you guys shared a bus with Propaganda, and they're kind of like your heroes.
Oh, fuck yeah.
How was that dynamic? And obviously, like, they're a very intense band. Politically, but they actually have kind of a super like funny, like not serious thing about them too. So how did you guys get along, and how was that being on kind of sharing a bus with your idols?
It was interesting. Like when they're introducing themselves, being like, "Hey, I'm Chris, I'm Todd, I'm George, I'm the Beef." We're just going, "Yep, I know. Yep. Yep. I know. Yep." And just feeling like such an idiot, you know, cause there's, like in reality, there's very few people that I'd feel star-stricken by in my life, you know, because I don't care that much. But it's like, this is my favorite band. This has always been my favorite band for as long as I can remember. And it's like meeting them for the first time, just being so nervous, just being like, oh my God, I got to kick off these shoes. I think they're leather, you know, and like all sorts of like little things just felt so like weird. And then like the first night, had a couple drinks, tried to buy Todd a drink, didn't know that he doesn't drink, felt like an idiot, but you know, stayed up with a couple of the guys and shared a couple laughs, and it was like, all right, just chill out, like they're just dudes. Yep. It's cool.
Yep.
And then you know, the rest of the tour we had a really good time with them. They're really down to earth, nice guys. And you know, I would call them friends now, but it feels still weird in my mouth.
Right. Yeah, no, that's always a funny thing when you become friends with your idol. Like for me, it's like, you know, Fat Mike, who I like.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, like I don't see him for a couple years and I like think he's like not going to remember me or something. Like I'll see him at a festival and he'll be like, Why aren't you talking to me? Like, are you mad at me? It's like, no, I just like, think you're not gonna like remember me or something. I don't know why. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about, man? It's, you know, it's like, it's
that's
just
fucking amazing.
It's just funny how, you know, you never lose that kid like thing, you know?
Oh yeah. The childlike glee.
Have you had younger bands come up to you like that and say, oh my God, like you're the reason that I, you know, became a singer or anything?
Yeah, we've had a couple people over the years be like, oh, yeah, you're the reason I started playing guitar. I've never had anyone say, you're the reason I started singing. That's for damn sure. But, yeah, like we've had a handful of kids over the years or people in other bands come up and be like, hey, man, like this record made me want to play music. And, like, that's a really cool experience, I think. Just having anyone be inspired by something that you did, and you know, especially if they go on to success themselves, it's like,
sure,
frig, that's like, that's a really interesting and wonderful feeling, you know. I'm sure you guys have had a fair share of that as well.
Yeah it happens from time to time. There hasn't been like a big mm-hmm. one yet though, you know,
where
like,
hasn't been any big ones for us either.
I want to really call in that favor one day, you know.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, I'm an influence of yours and you have a mansion? Like, I'm coming over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You owe me all of your success. That
hasn't like Drake.
Yet.
Oh, you know what? You know who I heard the other day? Fuck. That girl from the – you must have heard this. The girl from the movie Suicide Squad?
Yes.
The one – did you see that interview?
Yeah, she – what's her name? Margot
Robbie?
She
mispronounces it.
She says we got steined, yeah, as we say.
Yeah.
She called us Silverstein, but we were the first band she mentioned as when she used to listen to metal, so –
yeah, and we're she a metal said the band heaviest of the heavy metal.
Heaviest of heavy metal is Silverstein. Yes, that's right.
I can believe it. I was just watching that. I just went, "Whoa, fuck yeah!"
Oh, and you better believe it. The first thing I did was got on Twitter and sent her a Twitter like message like immediately. I was like, "Notice me. Like, are we married yet?
Yeah,
please."
Yeah, that was so cool. I was so fucking pumped about that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she mispronounced it, but it was like, cool. She's a fucking human being that's heard of, like, bands.
That's right. It's super funny. And it's funny because the only reason I was actually watching it on TV, because Metallica was on Jimmy Fallon, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I was watching it, because obviously you have to, I mean, it's Metallica. Can't miss that.
That must have been so, like, so surprising and strange for you. Like, you're just there for Metallica, and all of a sudden this like super famous celebrity tosses your name out.
You know what? I'll be honest. I missed that part. I came in after. I was like taking a piss or something, and I missed that part. And then my phone started blowing up, and I was like, oh. So I rewound it on my TV, which is a thing you can do now. And then I heard it. But no, it was a funny it was a funny thing, but so far no word back from Margot. But if Margot, if you're if I know you're not a lead singer, but if you want to come on the podcast, I'll break the rule for you. If you're listening.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. She's a babe. Anyways, yeah. What else do I want? Well, we gotta talk about a little more about Stay Warm, so people know. December 17th, 18th. 17th is Silverstein, 18th is Protest, River Oaks also playing on the 18th. So many great bands. American Nightmare, are you kidding me? Citizen, we got Code Orange, we got Flatliners, Wilhelm Scream, a number of other successful and great bands will be there. So you guys have, after you do that show and you do doing the tour, what's your plan moving forward with new music? Are you guys going to do more subscription-based stuff, traditional record?
You know,
what's your plan?
I don't think we'll revisit the subscription thing again, because, you know, like, it was fun and it was a really interesting relationship that we gained with the fans, but in like a strictly business sense, it doesn't grow the band at all.
Sure.
No, it doesn't even give the opportunity to do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, because it's just so cut and dried. It's like, this is for our fans and our fans only. So as much as it was an enjoyable experiment, like hustling our asses to write a song a month and releasing them and seeing what people thought immediately, it was, I don't know, on top of the fact that it didn't grow the band, it also was pretty strenuous.
Yeah.
You know, like having to write one of these friggin' songs in 1 month. That was pretty tricky, but whatever, happened. It's
so you guys,
over, but we're moving on.
So you guys did it legit like that? Because I would have just assumed you guys just had six songs and then you just waited and put one out every month.
No, I mean, we had the first two songs kind of written when we started it.
Yep.
Not recorded at all or anything like that. And then after those first two songs, it was like panic time. You know, it was like, we actually have to get this done. It was cool. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Because, like, you don't have time to second guess yourself. You don't have time to go back and change a bunch of stuff. It's just like, it is what it is. We did what we did. And, like, we have to release it. If people like it, that's great. If they don't, nothing we can do about it.
Sure.
So it was a really interesting thing. Somewhat stressful.
Cool. No, well, definitely looking forward to new stuff, and it's going to be rad. You guys are getting back out there for a big long support tour. Should make you feel like the old days a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I don't know. What are you guys up to? You're obviously in the UK right now. You're in there for 5 shows or
10 shows.
10 shows. Where the fuck are you going to play 10 shows in the UK?
If I wish they had guns here, so I could kill myself. they don't have guns, though. Unfortunately, the U.S. needs to take a note. But no,
they got police sticks.
Yeah, hit me in the head with a police stick, hard, very hard. No, 10 shows in the UK is a lot, and we never come here ever.
Yeah.
I think we've played. You know, as you say, you saw us Sonosphere. That was how many years ago, and that's like, I think since then we've been here twice, and we just played London twice, and that's it.
Yeah.
So. No, we don't. I don't really like the UK, to be honest with you. So yeah, 10 shows is pretty.
No.
Yeah.
That's pretty hectic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind the UK. Like, I got a lot of friends there that I really enjoy, and like a lot of bands that I like come from there. So it's cool to go there. But you know, like the weather, the food, the common complaints against the UK are all things that I commiserate with.
I find the UK fans. To be kind of fickle, and it's so press driven here, you know. And I talked a little bit. We didn't quite get into it with Frank Turner about this, but the one that came out today, you said you listened to. But like, you know, if you're not getting press, if you're not on cover of Kerrang, you know, people aren't coming to your shows. Like, they really, you need to have that. Like, you know, that's just kind of the way.
Yeah, you need to have that huge press machine behind you pumping people full of your shit, right?
You almost do here, I think. Otherwise, it's just not really happening. And people would argue that you get the press because, you know, people are at your shows, but it doesn't really work that way. I think it perpetuates itself in it. And, you know, you need to be saying something crazy on the cover of the magazine. You know, the same way, like, the Blur and Oasis, like, you know, feud of the 90s, like that was where it all stemmed from, you know. And they were just saying stuff so they could be on the cover of magazines, and like, in a way, that's still the way the UK treats press. And Kerrang comes out like every 2 weeks and they need something to talk about. So, you know, there's a lot of it's so press driven over here, and if you don't have the press, you know, it's not happening for you. And we don't have the press. I don't have a lot of tattoos, and I'm old, and you know, I don't know. I've never been addicted to drugs, so, you know, whatever.
You're still very good looking. Man, I've never really thought about it before, but, you know, we'll do an entire European tour, and I won't do a single interview, and then we get to, like, a UK festival, and it's like, oh, you got to be in that press place from this time to this time, and it's like, why?
Yeah.
You know, like, I've never thought about it before, but that's where, for some reason, the press does matter to, I guess, the people in the industry, because it doesn't matter shit to me.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Press is a weird thing too. I mean, like, half the time you're doing it and you don't really know. It's when you're in a foreign country, you don't even know like what it is, if it's big, if it's small, like, you know.
Yeah, if it's just like a high school newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. You never know the difference, and you just kind of do it, and you know, half the time I'm like not even saying things that are true and whatever. So
yeah, you ever do the like high school newspaper interview and only realize you're doing it like halfway through?
Yeah, my favorite with those things is like some of the questions, you know, state your name for the record, and how did you guys get your band name? And it's like, well, 16 years ago this happened, and I've talked about it many times, but I guess I'll explain it to you again.
A simple Google search would clear this up for you.
Yes. And anyways, but you get about halfway through. But usually those people are sweet, and like, you know, I don't get some bands get kind of pissed or like dicks about it. It's like, whatever, then you should have screened your interviews better, you know? It's not the person's fault that they were able to get an interview with you, you know?
No, it's kind of awesome that they did.
Right. Yeah, no. We used to, I mean, there were times I swear like some of them were just there to get on the guest list.
Oh yeah.
You know, I one time had an interview with a girl, it was on Warped Tour actually, where we talked and she didn't record it or write anything down. So I was like, you, how's this work? And she's like, oh no, I'll remember what you said.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, you can just write down whatever you think I said.
Yep.
That's wonderful. Shane Told, massive racist.
I'm pretty sure that she just I'm pretty sure that she
was probably there just there to talk to you.
Probably. I don't even think there was any publication. I think she just made it up.
Yeah.
You know.
I did one where like the questions were just slowly getting further and further away from the band and like devolving into the more like stupidest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Like it started with, she was like, what would be your tagger name if you were a tagger? Right. And I was like, oh, I don't know, Jeremy Taggart or something like that. And then like it got to the point where she was being like, so what's grosser, pee or poo? And I was like, okay, this is probably over, but it's poo. It's obviously poo. It's obviously
poo. Yeah. This interview is poo or pee, both together. You ever notice it's impossible to poo without peeing? Can you do it?
You know what? I have. I haven't pooed without peeing. Like, this is really getting bad. But I have shit, like, not in a toilet before. Have you ever done that?
Yes, I have.
Like, just out in the wild?
Yes, I have. Yeah, like, I mean, we're in bands. We have to do that shit once in a while.
Yeah, you usually end up pissing your pants.
I mean, yeah.
Unless you're smart about it.
Right.
I really hope my wife's parents don't listen to this.
No. Well, I'll maybe cut that. Maybe I'll cut out the shitting part.
No, keep it in.
Well, I'll tell you a quick shitting story while we're on it. This is a really weird episode. One time we were playing at the Skate and Surf Festival in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And woke up in the morning. We were staying in Victory Records, like, hotel room, like a couple, because we didn't have any money. So they let us crash on their floor. Their hotel room was like a shitty motel in somewhere in New Jersey. So I wake up in the morning and I got to go. So I go in the bathroom, but one of the Victory Records girls like showering in there. So I'm like, ah, God, okay, I'll go to the lobby. But it was one of those motels like that doesn't have like a lobby bathroom. Do you know what I mean? It's just like a weird office. There's like no actual bathroom.
Yep.
So oh, yeah. I look like kind of around and I'm like, well, I like, there's nothing I can do. I have to go immediately. So beside the hotel, there was like they were doing some kind of construction, and there was one of those like dumpster things, like where they throw all the like, you know, old wood or whatever, the, you know, garbage in. So there was that, and behind it was a chain link fence. So I said, well, that's the best I got. So I put my back,
oh man,
I put my back against the chain link fence, and the dumpster's like in front of me. So like no one can see me really. And I just, like, I pulled out my pants and I let it rip. And as I'm halfway, you know, keep in mind it's probably like, I don't know, like 9 in the morning maybe. I see a small child, about 5 years old, walking. And I'm like, oh, dear God. Like, walking on the sidewalk. And they can see in the crack between the dumpster and the chain link fence. So I'm just like, this could not be worse. This is the worst moment of my life.
Nope.
And the mom, and the kid's looking at me, and the mom somehow didn't look at me. I was looking at the kid being like, please don't tell your mom I'm here against the fence shitting. The mom didn't see me. They walked right past. And yeah, and I shit in broad daylight in New Jersey, which, hey, I mean, I had to go. I had no other option, but that's...
I want to make like a T-shirt of that incident, like you just up against a fence having a shit, looking at a child and hushing him.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know what to do. I remember afterwards, like, you know, I shit on the ground. I felt kind of weird about it. I ended up like being like, I can't just leave it here. So I was wearing like a plain white T-shirt, and I like sort of cleaned myself off and put the white T-shirt on top of my shit.
Yep.
And I walked in. I had a hoodie like undone because I'd taken my shirt off. And I walked back in the hotel room, and everyone's like, where were you? And I'm like all sweaty and like shitty.
Just out for a jog, boys.
And I'm just like, I didn't tell them. I was just like, just downstairs, like, whatever. I didn't like tell that story for like at least a week because it was so awful and embarrassing. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, everybody that's toured in a band has had a time like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what I'm saying. This is a real thing that it happens with guys in bands, because you can't shit on the bus, and venue bathrooms suck, and sometimes there aren't any, and you know, the amount of like bad Chinese food restaurants I've had to go to the bathroom in, it's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah. You know what's the weirdest part about your story? Is there are several members of our band in New Jersey specifically that have actually had to shit outside.
Something going on, man. It's that New Jersey water.
Something going on in Jersey.
It's like from the, it's like the, you know, the good water from New York gets run off and all the crap, and then it ends up in New Jersey, and then we drink it. I don't know, man. Well, hey, anything else serious before we call it?
No, I got nothing, man. Thanks okay. very much for having yeah. me on your show.
Of course. Thank you for listening to it. It's cool. And, I mean, I'll see you. Fuck, I'll see you in like a couple weeks.
Yes, sir.
Can't wait. Stay warm. 2016. It's coming. Toronto, get ready.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, 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 whoop. Awesome, man. Well, Rody, right, thank you
very
so much,
for
man.
Me.
Yeah, take care, dude.
You too.
Bye now. So there's my chat with Rody. I really did tell that story. I, you know, it's funny the whole unedited thing about this episode. Part of it, I was like, maybe that story's a little too hot for TV. But I decided I'm going to keep it in, and I was thinking about editing certain things. And when I listened back to the episode, I said, you know what? Let's just keep it raw this week. And I hope you guys appreciated that. And I can't have secrets anymore. Remember, if you're in Southern Ontario or Western New York or wherever, driving distance to Toronto, make sure you check out Stay Warm. And of course, 3 p.m. Eastern this Wednesday, All Access Club. I can't wait for you to join up. I can't wait to see you on Facebook. All the interaction we're going to have is going to be awesome. Some of the merch designs we're getting in are so rad, too. So please check all that out. I'm sure you'll hear about it Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Thank you to Rody for joining me, and thank you to you for listening. Here it is, as always, a track from the band of the week. This is Protest the Hero with C'est La Vie on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week. almost forgot while I have you. If you're doing holiday shopping on Amazon, throw us a bone because it's so easy. Whatever you buy on Amazon, we get 4 to 6%. And how you do it is don't go to Amazon. Go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. That takes you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal. And anything you buy, like I said, we get 4 to 6%. And all that really adds up. So if you spend $100, we get $4, $6. All that stuff really does help. So please, if you're doing any shopping at all on Amazon, go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.